Hello, listeners. This is Darren, and welcome to another episode of The Criterionist, a look at the Criterion Collection, one spine number at a time. This is episode 51, so we're going to take a look at spine number 51, and that's Terry Gilliam's 1985 film, Brazil. Also written by Gilliam, Tom Stoppard, and Charles Macau. Just so you know, this is a podcast where I will spoil everything and anything, so just proceed with caution. Go watch the movie. This is a beloved movie, so probably most of you have already seen it, but this is actually my first time finishing it. Weird story to start off the podcast. I've never finished this movie before, but I've gotten so far into it. This is a 2 hour and 20 minute film. And I think there's so many versions. I'm watching the director's cut. The one I watched, I thought it was the most appropriate. But I have gotten 2 hours into this 2 hour and 20 minute film. Like both times, the first time I believe it was from the library, and the ending was just scratched. So. For you, those of you who have seen it, and why are you listening if you haven't, Jill and Sam finally end up together, and honestly, that's all I remember. I think SWAT team comes in, but I don't know the fate of that. So I thought that was the ending, which kind of works. Then the next time, I think I got about that far, maybe even less further than that. And I think I just fell asleep, not due to boredom, just due to it being late. And then I never got back to it. I just never returned to it. Now here I am hosting a podcast. And finally, I have seen the last 20 minutes, which are pretty good. But let's get into the plot, I guess. So the film opens with a classic, it seems like a cliche opening for a movie, but just airplane, but you don't see the airplane, flying through the clouds. But this one's a little more different than other ones. Then this commercial starts playing, they reveal the TV playing the commercial, a bomb goes off, then the TV... goes into how bad the bombings have gotten in the world, or in wherever they are. It seems like the distant future, or not so distant future. It seems like the soonish future is the tone that Gilliam is going for here. So bombings are frequent, setting up that they're frequent. They're just around. It's just a thing that happens now. And this film starts crazy with the opening shot, the credits on the clouds, and this strange TV commercial, which I can't remember what it's for. It's probably important, though. Then a bomb, and then talking about the bombing. Then cutting to this man on a typewriter, or a copier, it seems like, killing a giant fake fly, which drops into the typewriter, changing the name Tuttle, which is constantly being copied, or just several copies of, it seems like an arrest report for this Tuttle, and then once changing it, the fly, changing it to Buttle, which then cuts to another crazy scene of this poor family. I think they're watching, I'm going to say, it's the Marx Brothers. And they're watching Horse Feathers, but I don't know. I'm just guessing for fun. They're poor. They seem happy, but stressed out that they're poor. But it's Christmas time, so they're a little bit happy. Their upstairs neighbor is in the bath watching the same movie. And then here's this noise. It goes, what the heck is that? And then... SWAT team comes in and takes the guy, because he is Buttle. That's the first 5-10 minutes of the movie. It's insane. It's random. It's not random after seeing the whole film. But it just seems so... It's well made. It's great. The cut to each crazy scene is amazing. Then we pretty much go to work, and some pretty normal gags here. The boss is watching, so everyone's hard at work. The boss goes in into his office, and everyone stops working and starts watching another movie. It's a Western. I have no idea which one, but it seems like an old-timey Western from, like, the 50s or something, or 40s even. Yeah, so amazing opening. If loyal listeners, if you remember Time Bandits, I didn't really care about that movie. Still don't, didn't, said on that one, I believe that I just don't get Gilliam. This is the one I've gotten the most, gotten out of the most, and the one I responded to the most, I guess. I don't think I love this movie like a lot of people do, but this is the closest I've gotten, besides some Monty Python stuff, but I'm not quite sure what Gilliam directed out of that. But yes, let's see. So, our main character, Sam Laurie, played by Jonathan Pryce, very good performance. I think it's the perfect person who could have played this role. Not very familiar with Jonathan Pryce, but he is absolutely amazing as this kind of dumb, lazy office worker who is basically going through a midlife crisis, as we'll get to. So he, basically the story, he's having this dream, I guess, where he is in this crazy, awesome flying suit, and he's the one who was flying, it's revealed. They don't come out and say it, it's pretty subtle, or, well, it's easy to figure out, but he's the one that was flying in the opening, and he sees this girl who is beautiful, might be an angel, I'm not sure, it's a dream, and he's late for work. This guy's got a rough life. He's late for work, his apartment doesn't have air conditioning or no heating. It seems like his mother is getting constant plastic surgery, and her friend is as well. She's getting better. The mother, Mrs. Laurie, is looking better and better. Her friend is not. She's getting worse and worse. Sam and his mom are constantly fighting about a promotion he's not taking. He doesn't want to because, again, he's kind of lazy, kind of dumb. Doesn't want to challenge himself. He's constantly trying to be set up with the lady who's also getting plastic surgery. Her daughter ends up, they don't like each other at all. But then he has to, it's sad, he has to go out to the family, the Buttles, and give them a refund check for the, it's not a mistake, but for the misunderstanding. There's a whole thing about mistakes I'll get to later. But, yeah, it's such an awkward scene. She is depressed as ever. He's giving a check for killing the husband, the father, on accident because of the fly that ran into the typewriter. It's such a odd and creative detail. I love it so much. But then he sees Jill, the upstairs neighbor, and that's the girl from the dream. So he tries to chase her, but he doesn't get there. So all this while, this strange side story of him, his apartment not having air conditioning. He calls Central Services. They won't come. So then Robert De Niro walks in with a gun to fix his air conditioning, and he ends up being Tuttle. He's the Tuttle that was supposed to be arrested, and not the Buttle. So this guy actually, Robert De Niro, in this silly, fantastic performance, helps him fix his air conditioning, and, well, sort of, just helps him out. They become, like, friends, and Sam, like, sticks up for him when Central Services does arrive. So then, again, this is a midlife crisis. Guy sees a beautiful lady and drops everything to find her. He takes the promotion. Instead of going to work right away, he immediately uses someone's computer to find Jill, and he does. And they go on this meet cute type action scene, chase scene, which is, it's nice. And then it ends up, she's carrying a package. It's maybe a bomb. A bomb goes off, and he's like, "You can't do that." And she's like, "I didn't do it. I had something else." It's a little confusing. Well, no, it's not confusing. But yeah, so she kind of gets mad. That's that. There's a lot going on in this movie. Then they are both arrested for treason. After another weird scene with Tuttle, and then Jill comes, they kind of fall in love, like, quickly, like a midlife crisis movie usually does. Someone falls in love too quickly, before really realizing the way he was doing things is just fine. But this one, they fall in love, and then the SWAT team comes in and kills Jill, I think, immediately, and Sam is captured. Now, there's this whole side story, which seems random, only because Michael Palin from Monty Python, it plays this, like, friend character that's more successful than Sam. His name is, like, Jack Flint, I think. They keep meeting. It ends up he kills Buttle. He's the one who killed Buttle, in this crazy interrogation room where Sam is now. There's this creepy baby mask where he's gonna torture him until he talks. I think that's what they're doing. There's this lady outside the gigantic room, typing all the words, like the in the courtroom where the person just types the conversation. So they know what happened, so they can go back and refer to it, I guess. But when Sam visits Jack, you just see her typing, like, screams and screams of pain, and then takes the headphones off, and you just hear "ow, ow," and it's creative, but it's tough to think about, I guess. So then there's just this whole sequence of Jack escaping from Tuttle. Sam escaping from Tuttle, and De Niro has shot Michael Palin in the head. They escape. This crazy trash thing happens with Robert De Niro's character. He's just covered in papers, and then just disappears. It's amazing. Thought it was real at first because the movie was, the movie had me, I guess. There's this classic documentary of Jaws line where Steven Spielberg changes the ending into an unbelievable one, like, what, Chief Brody's gonna shoot the tank and it's gonna explode? That doesn't totally make sense, but Steven Spielberg's like, I've had them for 2 hours, they are gonna believe anything I do at this point. And that's what happens here. I believe Tuttle was abducted by someone with trash, or escapes with trash. So then Sam runs to a funeral, and it's the mother's friend who's finally just died. then he like falls into the coffin, finds Jill, and they escape together. But then, the part you need to see, which I think was cut out, like the part I stopped in before the SWAT team comes into the romance, is the ending that the studio wanted. The director's cut, though, it has Jack be in the interrogation room and his mind has broken, pretty much. They have made him mad, like a mad mental patient, pretty much. And he has just imagined this whole thing, but he's totally lost his mind, and it's terribly depressing. And the credits, literally, while playing the song Brazil, which is sung a few times, the credits just stay on him, just sitting in there in this wide, big room, all alone. And it is tough. It is crazy. But I don't love it, but I really like it. I am excited to finally respond to a Gilliam film. Because everybody loves him, even the other Criterion podcast, it seems, just love him, and I just go, I don't get it. Maybe, what am I missing? Is it me? Is it them? It's probably me, is what I come down to. But this one feels right. This one feels good. I'm excited. I don't know if this is the one they love the most. That are Time Bandits, and maybe I should watch Time Bandits again. It's been not a lot of episodes, but it's been a long time since I've seen it. So maybe I should go back to that. I believe Criterion only has Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas left for Gilliam. I know he's got way more, so I'll probably check. I think there's one more, but the Fisher King. That'll be a long time till I get to that one. Yeah, well, let me just, like I said, I really like it. Don't love it. One of the reasons I don't love it is the same reason I don't like the movie Her. Now, I think I like Her a little more, the Spike Jonze film with Joaquin Phoenix and Scarlett Johansson. But there's so much world building in both of the movies, so much so that it almost takes me away from the story. That's just a personal thing, though. It's absolutely amazing how much detail goes into both of these movies. I respect the heck out of it, but it just takes me out of the movie. But man, it's amazing. Okay, so here's some stuff that I noticed. The computer screens, you like put this magnifying glass in front of a tiny screen and makes it bigger. That's amazing. The mother is clearly getting a facelift, so she wants to feel young. She wants to feel popular and just relevant. So she's wearing this shoe on her head, which I don't know. What? It's awesome. It's crazy. There's the big room, which must be a matte painting in the background, but it's just such an interesting thing. And the creepy baby faces that Jack wears when he interrogates people. There's a bunch of little stuff. Robert De Niro fills these hazmat suits when Central Services does arrive and kicks. I don't know if I said this, but kicks. Basically, Sam's life falls apart. He gets a big trouble in his job for not doing any work and just not being in his, kicked out of his apartment for maybe just not being there. But Robert De Niro's character, Tuttle, fills the sewage pipeline up with their hazmat suit pipes, their fresh oxygen pipes must be. He just switches it, and it's kind of gross and odd. Just a weird little detail. Yeah, there's not a lot more that I'm remembering right now. I'm looking at my notes to see there's anything. The weird typewriter that's also a copier. It's a wrong vision of the future, but it is such an interesting one. It's almost just like bravo on your vision of another world, an alternate universe, but you're wrong. You're very wrong, but you're also, you got it. You got a lot of imagination in you, which is not anything new to say about Terry Gilliam. Let me talk about the performances. Robert De Niro, perfectly silly after Godfather Part II and Deer Hunter and Taxi Driver. The 80s seemed like I'm a little tired, guys. I gotta be funny, which can be tiring in itself, but at least it could be a little more fun than Deer Hunter, which had to be just the most dour filming experience of all time. He made Midnight Run, I believe, which I haven't seen, but he made King of Comedy, one of my favorite films ever, which is basically Taxi Driver, but a comedy. Just a flat-out comedy. He's Robert De Niro. That's probably my favorite performance of his. Here's another one where he's just goofing around pretty much. Just overdoing it, but in the best way. One of the central service workers, the second time he made the Criterion Collection, Bob Hoskins. He was in the Long Good Friday. He's great, man. He's a delight. I know I've seen him in other stuff. Sadly, one of them, if I'm getting this right, the Mario Brothers movie. But I gotta check him out more. He's amazing. Michael Palin is probably my favorite Monty Python alum, and yeah, he's great in this movie. He plays a guy who's full of delight, and then you find out what he does, and it's like, oh, that's odd. Why you're so happy? Yeah, Kim Greist plays Jill. She's fine. Nothing special. Catherine Helmond plays the mom, which is a pretty funny performance. And his two bosses, Ian Holm plays his first boss. He's pretty good. But then Ian Richardson, in a pretty funny scene where his new job is just, the boss is always wandering the halls. People are following him, trying to get, hey, can you sign this? Can you look at this? And then he looks at it for maybe half a second and makes a decision immediately. It's a pretty funny few scenes he's got. Even when he's standing still, he's got the group behind him, like waving papers, trying to wait for their turn. Pretty amazing. Yeah. That's it. I wouldn't take away all the detail. It's just the kind of thing in a movie that distracts me, maybe. And maybe it's supposed to. Like, if it wasn't so thought out. Maybe thought out is not the right word. The problem, I mean, maybe pointing it out so much is the problem. But all the little details are amazing. That's the worst part of the movie. Everything else is pretty great. Including the themes, which I'll get into right now. I saw a couple themes. There's probably a lot more than what I'm going to talk about. I would love to hear some. If you want to email me at TheArin, Criterion, number 4, at yahoo.com. I'll get that in early. Before going into the themes, which is the company that Sam works for, just always, their motto is pretty much, we have no mistakes. Even though they capture the wrong guy, kill him, and still Sam is taught or has just been brainwashed to a point where he says, oh yeah, that wasn't a mistake. That was just, and then makes an excuse. I don't even remember what it is, but that is always just companies lying right to your face, and clearly something Gilliam is passionate about, just companies just lying and taking your money, taking your time, and just not being honest, and it angers him clearly. And that's one of the themes I saw. But another more relevant to, like, right now, February 2016, is the one of the not-so-distant future being a dark, dark place of, well, bombings are normal here. There is the dinner scene where a bomb goes off and Sam is just not fazed. The mom's friend is there. They are not fazed. These bombs are dangerous. People are hurt. Blood is seen. People are on the ground just screaming. And there's just a cleanup crew. The people just clean it up while everyone else goes about their business. And this is what, if the technology is wrong, for Gilliam's, predictions, then this prediction is close to correct, which is a sad, dark thing to think about. But the Boston Marathon bombing happening, the Paris bombings, all the shootings, which there are guns in this movie, but bombs are the big ones here. All the school shootings seem relevant to this idea he's putting out, this idea of just numbing to tragedy. I saw a post somewhere, just like, no prayer for this place. I hope we're not just getting used to this, which I hope we aren't either. We have to, I'm not very political, but this future in Brazil cannot happen. We need to always feel pain when something tragic, a shooting, a bombing, even a natural disaster happens. We cannot become like Sam and his mom and everyone else in the film. And Jill is the hero. Sam thinks Jill has bombed the place. Says, "How could you do this? This is terrible." And then she goes, "I didn't do this. Look, it's just some, I don't even remember what it is." And she goes, "Help." And that's when he finally, instead of numbing to the thought of a bombing, instead of just going, "Oh, this is normal. I might die today. I might get up and die. But that's life." Instead of that, he should be like Jill, who is killed immediately when the SWAT team comes in. He should be like her and do something about it instead of hiding it. Again, kind of mixes with both of my themes, kind of mix the no mistakes, like, oh, this will just pass. This is not our fault. This is someone else's fault. And not fixing it. And that's what the people are doing. They are just saying, this is not my fault, and not fixing it. Instead, this one scene where Jill says, "Help these people." And that's what the movie is about. It was made 31 years ago, and it's even more relevant now, which got to me, and which is one big reason why it works so well for me. I think I've talked myself into liking this film even more. I still don't love it, but I love a lot of parts of it. So that got dark and serious, but that's what movies are all about sometimes. Sometimes they're to make you laugh hysterically. Sometimes they need to get a point across. This one blends those both pretty well. I think I'll stop there then. I will, again, email me at darrencriterion14 at yahoo.com. That's D-A-R-I-N, Criterion. Number one, number four at yahoo.com. Follow me at Twitter at schmuck4alife. Yes, I've changed it. I don't know why. Don't ask me. And listen to my other podcast, The Rosebuds, which you can find on iTunes. I co-host that with my friend Andrew. Lately, we've done the Rank All, where we rank all the films we saw from 2015. And by the time this is out, I think we will have done our top 15 of 2015. So go check those out, because that is a thing we are proud of. The Rosebuds, you can find on iTunes. You can find this on iTunes. Go give it a review on iTunes, because I would like that. I would like to know who's listening and what you think. What could I improve? Just go do that right now. And next week, number 52 in the Criterion Collection is Akira Kurosawa? I think it is. His film Yojimbo from 1961, which I haven't seen and I've been wanting to see for a long, long time, so I cannot wait to get there. Thank you for listening, and I will see you, hear you. Well, I won't hear you, but you will hear me next episode. Goodbye.